Everyone, and welcome to minute 40 of season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we fubar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off the week is the Flapper Dame herself, Emily. Welcome back to the show.
It's been so wonderful to discuss this, and we still have one episode left, so it's going to be really.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what all these guys are doing. You know, yes. they all look very busy. You know, so they must be doing something important. They must be. So minute 40 begins with Miller entering a new outpost and ends with Upham asking a question. So yesterday we ended things with Miller walking up towards this little post area or whatever it is where we see four soldiers that are leaning over documents or something like that in this little area, and Miller just walks up and the two guards let him through, and one of the guards screams attention. And then the four guys that are sitting around all quickly stand up, and stand at attention. And then Miller says to them, as you were. I like the way that, he becomes very informal as he's walking in there. You know, he takes off his helmet and puts his helmet over, I think it's like binoculars or something like that, that's holding onto it. And he has this piece of paper on him, and he starts reading through the paper and goes, I'm looking for Corporal Upham, Timothy E. Now, until I saw this movie, I've never heard the name Upham beforehand. Did you know that it is actually a pretty famous name that goes back many, many years?
No.
Okay. I didn't. So it's originally a British name from Devon in Somerset, and it means that it means either village or homestead, or sometimes even a water meadow. You know, because as we know, last names usually came from either the area that people were living. You know, the topographical area, geography, sometimes it was related to the professions and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I actually did a quick list, a search, and I found like a whole bunch of names of people that were named Upham, which is, there's even a real Timothy Upham.
Oh.
who was an American soldier in the War of 1812. And then became the collector of customs and a politician. He was born in 1783 and died in 1855. So I wonder if there's any connection between them. If when they were researching this, they came across this name and decided to use it. I mean, there was a U.S. senator from Vermont in the late or in the mid 1800s that was named William Upham. What other Uphams were there? There was the president of the University of Tulsa, Stedman Upham. Samuel Upham was an American journalist and counterfeiter of Confederate money. Then there is a Native American actress named Misty Upham, who passed away in 2014. Actually, I think I know who she is. Now that I think about it, I think she was in a movie. I think she was in Frozen River, and she died in like a really tragic way. I think she fell down into a ravine or something like that, and was missing for a while, stuff like that. So she was born in 1982, Misty Ann Upham. Yes, she's the one from Frozen River. She was also in August, Osage County. She was in Cake with Jennifer Aniston. Oh wow, she was in Django Unchained. And then the aforementioned Frozen River. But right, I remember reading the tragic story of what happened to her. She died of blunt force trauma. On October 5th, 2014, she was seen in her apartment in Auburn, Washington. Her father called police on October 6th, saying that she was missing. Police stopped her father from going after her. Instead, they searched her apartment and felt that she left on her own volition and had not officially declared her missing. On October 12th, she still hadn't contacted family or friends. So then on October 16th, family and friends found a body in a ravine that they believed to be hers. And despite pleas from the family, the police refused to help with the search and rescue efforts. They ended up, they found her body, you know, 10 days afterwards.
Oh my God. I don't remember thinking about that, but that's absolutely terrible.
Yeah. So, okay. There is a, Upham that I've heard of. I mean, I didn't make the connection between them. So the most decorated Commonwealth soldier in World War II was named Charles Upham from New Zealand. So maybe that's also connected. Maybe there's some sort of connection there. You know, having a soldier who was very highly decorated, you know, using that name for a character like Upham here or whatever. Interesting.
It is.
Yeah. Then, so his first name is Timothy. Do you know what Timothy means?
No.
So it means to honor God. In the New Testament, he was a companion of Saint Paul. It's both a surname and a first name. I don't think I've ever heard of anyone with the last name Timothy. I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't know it could be a last name either.
Yeah. So it basically means like God's honor, that type of thing.
Okay.
So, yeah. Again, I found tons of names of people that were named Timothy. You have a lot of people in sports. You have a lot of people in the arts who are named Timothy. Different actors. You have a lot of politicians who were named who were also named Timothy. But I wanted to actually focus on the fictional characters named Timothy. So you have Reverend Timothy Lovejoy from The Simpsons. Timothy McGee from NCIS. In Dumbo, what was the name of the mouse? Timothy Q. Mouse. A character in the Pixar film Cars was named Timothy Two Stroke. You have in A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, you have Tiny Tim, who's Timothy Cratchit. And one of the Robins in the Batman was Tim Drake, Timothy Drake. So yeah, I just thought that's very interesting. To connect that, because again, I don't think any of those characters really embody what we get here with Timothy Upham. You know, he's very unique from that perspective. And then I also like the fact that they don't show everything that happens here, because basically Miller shows up and he's got this piece of paper, and he just said to us yesterday, towards the end of yesterday's minute, he was basically saying, I'm now going to, you know, I'm going to find us a new interpreter. So apparently he had to go somewhere, fill out a requisition form, and, you know, decide, okay, I'm going to, you know, I want to find someone to be an interpreter for us. And they said, okay, why don't you go and take Upham? You know, he's the guy you want to take. And, you know, then he, because he's taken out a piece of paper that he's basically had Upham signed over to him. You know, that's the idea. And, you know, so when he says, I'm looking for Corporal Upham Timothy E., he goes, yes, sir, I'm Upham, sir. And he goes, I understand you speak French and German. Yes, sir. How's your accent? Just a slight one in French, but my German's clean. Has a touch of Bavarian, sir. Now, why would he ask about his accent? Like, what's the difference? They need someone who can interpret for them. You know, if they run into someone who speaks French or German, they don't need him to be able to speak it perfectly. They need him to be able to understand it, don't they?
Yeah, that it's an interesting, unless they're, yeah, why would you ask if that is interesting about the accent?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out why he would ask that, unless he's just, you know, maybe Miller is joking around when he's saying that, you know, trying to say, okay, well, they're giving me, if I'm going to get an official interpreter, let's hope it's someone who doesn't have an accent type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know, because his response is, okay, very good. You've been reassigned to me. Grab your gear. We're going to a place called Newville. Yes, sir. And at this point, he starts walking away, you know, to go grab his gear. And, you know, beforehand, I love how Miller gives him the piece of paper to prove to him that you've now been reassigned to me, type of thing. And mm-hmm. Upham takes his time reading it as he's moving around to go get his all his gear. And then, you know, Miller then kneels next to a one of the other guys who has this map that he's working on or whatever it is. And then Miller says to him, when was this updated? And he goes, updated as of 8:30 this morning. And then Upham comes back and interrupts and goes, sir. And then we hear, this is the 12th SS Panzer. These are the two axes that advance south. Sir, there are Germans in Newville. And then, you know, they're basically still ignoring him. And then this other guy says, there are artillery up here, sir. He goes, and then Miller responds to Upham and says, well, that's what I understand, Corporal. Yes, sir. Sir, there are a lot of Germans in Newville. You have a problem with that, Corporal? No, sir. Just if you consider, I've never been in combat, sir. I make maps and I translate. And that's, I need someone who speaks French and German. Yes, sir. My two guys were killed. Yes, sir. It's just that I haven't held a weapon since basic training, sir. Did you fire the weapon in basic training? Yes, sir. Well, then, get your gear. Yes, sir. Sir, may I bring my... And then he's going to get cut off at the end of this minute. But again, while they're having this, this is a great conversation, the way that they present this, you know, because Miller is having this conversation, but at the same time, he's copying information from this map that this map reader is showing him, you know, because Miller, it knows that they're going on this mission to Newville. So he wants to get as much of the intel as he can, but he's still having his conversation with Upham at the same time. And Upham basically does not want to go. You know, as far as he's concerned, he doesn't need to be there. And, you know, he just needs to sit. He just wants to sit and translate maps. That's it. You know, I don't need to go to Newville. You know, and I love the fact that, you know, he picks up his gear and you can see how nervous Upham is. And, you know, at the same time, then he goes to pick up his typewriter, which I've spoiled something when people are going to find out on Monday. But, you know, as he's asking, he picks up the typewriter and, you know, knocks over all the helmets that are there on this little shelf. And mm-hmm. then, and the typewriter itself is not secured properly. So that also, you know, comes sprawling out of this container. Upham is not expecting to go into battle, even though he is very close to the battle.
Yeah.
He's in a place that is as close as one can get to being in battle without actually being in the battle. So I like the way that they do that. You know, here, you know, up until now, we've seen soldiers that are pretty much gung-ho. They're all ready to go you know, lay down their lives to go fight for democracy and things like that. And, you know, here we are being introduced to a character that is a map reader. You know, that's his job, and that's what he loves doing. And, you know, that's what he uses his language skills for. You know, he's not using it to combat the enemy physically. He's doing it more from a intellectual perspective to try and fight the enemy, you know, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And here he's taken aback by the fact that he's actually, you know, being told that he should go take a weapon and go off to the front. I mean, he's not a pacifist or anything like that. He's just not someone who, I guess, has any real desire to be, you know, to be a combat soldier, which I guess is the idea. Now, what's funny is he says he hasn't held a weapon since he was in basic training. But I'm assuming that, you know, whatever weapon he's going to be taking on, you know, the beginning of next week, I'm assuming this is his weapon. So he's held it. You know, it somehow got to Normandy. You know, weapons don't you know, guns don't just appear on the Normandy front. So I'm not really sure where that's coming from. I mean, we'll have to wait until Monday to see where he actually gets the gun from. But at this point, he's just armed with his web gear, his knapsack or his duffel bag, and his typewriter that is no longer in its case. You know, and I love how this movie, this is the second time that we've mentioned typewriters, and the fact that Tom Hanks himself is a collector of typewriters, it cracks me up that there are two scenes where Tom Hanks is dealing with typewriters. And it always makes me wonder if it was something that was added specifically for Tom Hanks.
That's interesting, because it was, I find it interesting that if it was written specifically in for Tom Hanks, that in 1990, like, he's a typewriter collector. I find that at this point in time that typewriters were going by the wayside, yet he decided to still, like, hang on to them. I just find that very interesting, that the point in time in which this film was made, like, people were trying to get rid of their typewriters and get, like, a desktop computer, and he was still hanging on to the typewriters. I find that so cool.
Yes.
I actually have two vintage typewriters that my mom said that I can have them when she dies, that they belong to her parents, and, like, the ribbon is falling apart, the ink doesn't work, but I'm like, I still want to keep that because it's just cool.
Yeah. No, but can't you fix those things?
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. But they're not getting fixed right now, but eventually I definitely would like to repair them. But I just think that that's awesome that Tom Hanks was holding on to his when in an era in which people were getting rid of theirs.
Again, he still has them. I mean, they even did a documentary about people who still use typewriters, and Tom Hanks is featured in that documentary. I think it's called maybe California Typewriter or something like that. Okay. Should be something easy to find the name of. But it's very cool. Because again, this is the second scene. We've gone through 40 minutes of this movie, and this is the second time that a typewriter has shown up in a war movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not something that you would normally expect to show up like that. So, yeah, I don't know. I also like the way that this, in this minute, Miller explains why he needs Upham, and basically explaining to us the usefulness of a character like Upham. You know, he needs him to be able to translate with everything. You know, there, because It makes you wonder if most units during World War II needed to have translators, in order to help them along with things. I don't know.
Most definitely, I think the answer is yes, because my grandfather came out of World War II knowing some German and some French words. But oddly, he never told me that they had a translator with them, but I think I mean, they were training people quickly in like French and German around that time so that they could get information with other from other either secretly or especially with the German side, they wanted people to be on the inside and be able to speak it fluently.
Right. Interesting. You mean in order to be able to like eavesdrop on conversations and things like that?
Yes.
Okay. That makes sense. That makes sense. And that's all I have to say about the this minute. One last thing I want to say is I love how when the typewriter falls, we hear the actual binging sound of the typewriter. They have that bell on the typewriter
Yes.
that you hear
Yes.
slightly. Just to show the authenticity of that typewriter, which
Yeah.
is great. I have nothing else to say about this minute. Do you have anything else you want to say?
Just that the fact that he said grab your gear, I love that because my grandfather said that verbatim to me that that's what they actually used to say, grab your gear and go. So I appreciate that little small but accurate piece of dialogue there.
Okay, makes sense. It's definitely something that you need, and but look at it from the perspective of Upham. When he says to him, "Grab your gear," what does he grab? He grabs his web gear, he grabs his duffel bag, and he takes a typewriter. That's his gear. So it says a lot about the character just by the idea of what it is that he finds is important for him to take with him when he's going on a trip to behind enemy lines in Newville. So I think that's really cool. Every Friday we have a segment called Filmmaker Friday, where my guests will give their top five Steven Spielberg directed films. So once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Okay, number five is War Horse. I thought that was interesting. I only saw it once, but the fact that it was World War One, you don't see many World War One movies compared to World War Two. So that was interesting. Number four, Schindler's List. Again, that's not a movie that I watch very often just because it is a heavy, heavy movie. But it's very emotional and powerful. Everybody needs to see that movie at least once in their life. Even if you never watched again,
Completely
just
agree.
once and watch it. Number three, Jaws. Jaws, I didn't see that movie until I was like 19 fully through, and I just thought that it was so interesting how the shark would malfunction, yet they still were able to keep the suspense. I thought that was just great. Number two is Saving Private Ryan. And then number one is Lincoln. I think Lincoln, I think I mentioned it before, but Lincoln is, I think, underrated and it's on its way to being one of the great movies. I think of not only the decade of the 2010s, but of this, it could be one of the best movies of the century. I think it's well on its way to becoming that. I remember going to see that movie in theaters. It, the only one that I got to see in theaters because I didn't watch War Horse in theaters. But Lincoln, I don't know. I think it's just great. Daniel Day-Lewis maybe gave the best performance of his career, and I really have an appreciation for that movie.
Oh, wow. Very cool. That is a great
Yes.
list. Thank you very much for that once again. So for one final time, this week, would you like to tell everyone where they can find the flapper dame, Emily?
My film blog is theflapperdamefilm.wordpress.com, and then I'm on Twitter and Instagram at the handle flapperdame16, and then I am on YouTube where I talk not only films but also classic rock on my YouTube channel, Flapper Dame, and then in parentheses it says Emily G, and that's where you can find me on the internet.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Emily, thank you very much for joining me this week. I've had a lot of fun. I hope you have also. And even more importantly, I hope everyone listening has enjoyed.
For sure. It was just so interesting to talk about this film from a different sort of perspective, like minute by minute. It's just very, very interesting.
That is the goal. That's what we try and do here. All right, so I will be back on Monday with a new guest to try and find out what else Upham wants to take with him on his journey. So everyone have a great weekend, and until Monday, earn this.
Burn this.
My solitude, you reveries of days gone by.